So-and-so is indeed not a man of an angry disposition, but still he sometimes gives way to anger. And he is not, indeed, inclined to fear, but still he sometimes experiences fear. In other words, he is free from the fault, but he is not free from the passion of fear. If, however, fear is once given an entrance, it will, by frequent use, pass over into a vice. And anger, once admitted into the mind, will alter the earlier habit of a mind that was formerly free from anger. Besides, if the wise man, instead of despising all causes that come from without, ever fears anything, when the time arrives for him to go bravely to meet the spear or the flames on behalf of his country, his laws, and his liberty, he will go forth reluctantly and with flagging spirit. Such inconsistency of mind, however, does not suit the character of a wise man. Then again, we should see to it that two principles which ought to be tested separately should not be confused. For the conclusion is reached independently that that alone is good which is honorable, and again independently the conclusion that virtue is sufficient for the happy life. If that alone is good which is honorable, everyone agrees that virtue is sufficient for the purpose of living happily. But, on the contrary, if virtue alone makes men happy, it will not be conceded that that alone is good which is honorable. Xenocrates and Speusippus hold that a man can become happy even by virtue alone, not, however, that that which is honorable is the only good. Epicurus also decides that one who possesses virtue is happy, but that virtue of itself is not sufficient for the happy life, because the pleasure that results from virtue, and not virtue itself, makes one happy. This is a futile distinction, for the same philosopher declares that virtue never exists without pleasure, and therefore, if virtue is always connected with pleasure, and always inseparable therefrom, virtue is of itself sufficient. For virtue keeps pleasure in its company, and does not exist without it, even when alone. But it is absurd to say that a man will be happy by virtue alone, and yet not absolutely happy. I cannot discover how that may be, since the happy life contains in itself a good that is perfect and cannot be excelled. If a man has this good, life is completely happy. Now, if the life of the gods contains nothing greater or better, and the happy life is divine, then there is no further height to which a man can be raised. Also, if the happy life is in want of nothing, then every happy life is perfect. It is happy, and at the same time, most happy. Have you any doubt that the happy life is the supreme good? Accordingly, if it possesses the supreme good, it is supremely happy. Just as the supreme good does not admit of increase, for what will be superior to that which is supreme, exactly so the happy life cannot be increased either, for it is not without the supreme good. If then you bring in one man who is happier than another, you will also bring in one who is much happier. You will then be making countless distinctions in the supreme good. Although I understand the supreme good to be that good which admits of no degree above itself. If one person is less happy than another, it follows that he eagerly desires the life of that other and happier man in preference to his own. But the happy man prefers no other man's life to his own. Either of these two things is incredible, that there should be anything left for a happy man to wish for in preference to what is, or that he should not prefer the thing which is better than what he already has. For certainly, the more prudent he is, the more he will strive after the best, and he will desire to attain it by every possible means. But how can one be happy who is still able, or rather who is still bound, to crave something else? I will tell you what is the source of this error. Men do not understand that the happy life is a unit. For it is its essence, and not its extent, that establishes such a life on the noblest plane. Hence, there is complete equality between the life that is long and the life that is short, between that which is spread out and that which is confined, between that whose influence is felt in many places and in many directions, and that which is restricted to one interest. Those who reckon life by number, or by measure, or by parts, rob it of its distinctive quality. Now, in the happy life, what is the distinctive quality? It is its fullness. Satiety, I think, is the limit to our eating or drinking. A eats more and B eats less. What difference does it make? Each is now sated. Or A drinks more and B drinks less. What difference does it make? Each is no longer thirsty. Again, A lives for many years and B for fewer. No matter. If only A's many years have brought as much happiness as B's few years. He whom you maintain to be less happy is not happy. The word admits of no diminution. He who is brave is fearless. He who is fearless is free from sadness.